Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
On Wednesday, the Chicago Board of Education displayed something teachers, students, administrators, and parents hadn't seen in 3 years, a balance sheet containing a budget surplus instead of red ink. My guests this weekend probably hope much of that extra money ends up in the classrooms, in nurses' and counselors' offices, and maybe their paychecks. It's a conversation with the top officials of the Chicago Teachers Union. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. My guests this weekend are the highest-ranking officers of the Chicago Teachers Union, a Local 1 president, Jesse Sharkey, and his partner in labor activism, Union Vice President Stacey Davis Gates. Jesse Sharkey was appointed to be president of the union last September, replacing Karen Lewis, who retired for health reasons. Mr. Sharkey was vice president for 9 years, and he was a key player in contract talks way back then and in the 2012 teacher strike. He was a high school social studies teacher before he was elected to union leadership. Stacey Davis Gates was elected CTU vice president after serving 6 years as legislative and political director. She was a leader of the union's work on behalf of its endorsed candidates. Ms. Davis Gates also has been president of United Working Families for nearly 2 years. She is also a high school social studies teacher. Jesse Sharkey and Stacey Davis Gates, welcome.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you.
We should mention something else you didn't say there, which is that we're both CPS parents. I've got a couple kids in CPS schools myself.
Okay. I have 3 children, 2 of which are CPS students right now.
Okay. Well, and that is an important dimension these days because that means you have a stake in the game. Not that it's a game anymore or ever. CPS administrators ended last year with a $324 million surplus. Last year, the year before that, had a $275 million deficit. So that's about a $600 million swing. Is the school board going to end up regretting letting you guys know that it's gotten more money?
Well, the school board is benefiting from really a lot of work that a lot of people did, including the teachers union and our members in particular, getting more revenue. I mean, it's been a demand for a long time. We spent years pointing out that there were huge corporate tax breaks, that there were deals being made that benefited banks downtown, and that all that meant that there was real budget cuts to the Board of Ed. And recently in Springfield, there's been almost $1 billion worth of new revenue coming into the schools over the course of the last couple of years, and has a lot to do with our advocacy around that issue.
Hasn't it also had to do with the passage of new funding legislation? Some of that money is coming from there, right?
Well, that's right, and that's what I'm saying is that there's been legislation, and there's also TIF surplus money coming back into the schools to tune about $100 million a year, and that's been exactly the kind of thing that we've been advocating for years.
But before we celebrate, to be perfectly honest, that surplus reflects the budget cuts that have been baked in over time. So while we have been raising the issues of the lack of staffing in the school buildings, so the lack of adults in the school buildings, the lack of school nurses and social workers and counselors, that is what that surplus also represents. So it's threefold. We fought for a TIF surplus that we can identify within that overall surplus. We've fought for a new funding formula that looks a lot like the school Chicago students deserve. And we've also had to absorb a number of draconian cuts, 50 school closings along the way, that also represent that surplus. So there is both victories within that we will take all the credit for, to be perfectly honest with you, because we went on strike for a day in 2016, which brought an extreme amount of attention to the very budget deficits that we're dealing with. will take credit for the way that the school funding formula looks and that it prioritizes school districts that deal with high concentrations of poverty. It prioritizes spending for smaller class sizes and wraparound services. And we'll also talk about the extraordinary amount of cuts that Rahm Emanuel has made since he's been mayor of this city.
They've been savaging the schools.
Well, and now we come to the contract negotiations. What does this deficit do for either the kinds of things you will be asking for at the table or what kind of atmosphere you may face?
Well, it's turned into a surplus now. So it's there's a history of a deficit.
That's as I should
right. No, no, I take your point, though, which is that but now there's some money in the coffers. I mean, one of the things it means, though, is that the point that Stacey was making is absolutely right. We have to address what's become a really dire historical short funding of the schools. The board is running bare-bones schools in a lot of our neighborhoods. We're talking about schools without librarians. You know, typical school nurse has to go to 5 different schools a week. We're talking about ballooning class sizes, even in the early primary grades, which all the research says is a terrible idea. So one of the things it means is address critical staffing shortages. Second thing is that a lot of our members are working in schools and have seen their pay really fall below both historical levels of CPS, which aren't that great to begin with, and have fallen below other comparison districts.
So you are, in your demands, asking for things like, well, smaller class sizes is traditional, but also an important dimension, but if a 5% raises, what are some of the other, what are the things that you think are going to be easiest to get, or maybe easier because of the surplus, versus some things that are going to be knockdown, drag-out fights?
We're not celebrating the surplus at the Chicago Teachers Union. We are pointing out that that surplus is a result of cuts to special education. We're pointing out that that surplus represents the lack of staffing at schools that need it so desperately. So it's not a surplus. What it is that it is ransom that they've held away from our school communities since Rahm Emanuel has been over our school district. That's what that represents. What we will say is that, quite frankly, the fight for revenue continues, that we are going to have to get to a point of where we're staffing our school communities adequately. We're going to have to get to a point of where we're not talking about class size as if it is something aspirational and not a requirement of how we do education in Chicago.
But when you're asking for things like more counselors, more nurses, more A's, does the existence of what looks like a surplus make that an easier, and easy is the wrong word, but make that an ask that you can expect a more favorable answer to than it might have been otherwise?
Well, you know, we've all, I'm sorry.
No, I think it makes it harder for them to say they don't have the money to do it. When obviously their own books show that they had a $600 million turnaround over last year. And you ask what's possible. And I think we should start with what we're seeing in other places. Start with what LA did, you know, which is they won over the life of this new contract. There was a big strike in Los Angeles and it just settled earlier this week. And you saw over the life of that contract, a 4 student per class reduction in class sizes, which will be enforceable. You saw the hiring of a nurse in every school, which is something that we don't have in Chicago that we need, and a number of other improvements. So we know these things are doable. We know they're doable in other big urban districts, and we intend to make those things a reality.
What kind of response have you had from the district so far, whether it's offline or on? I know that they've made a counterproposal, and I'm expecting being a union person myself, I would expect that it's not what you were looking for either. But
yeah, their proposal is weak sauce. I would say more about it than that, but it's pitiful at this point. It's anemic and pitiful. We really are expecting the district to agree to address a big backlog of really critical issues in our schools. And, you know, I guess it's, maybe it's not that surprising that's not coming from the district. This is a district with a long history of shortchanging our students. But we put those ideas forward in our proposal, and we expect them to respond.
There's no disputing that the city schools have looming pension debt. What are you recommending that the system do beyond going to Springfield and saying we need more money? What are you recommending be done?
Well, first off, we were successful in getting the pension levy re-implemented. And it's not a pension problem. It's actually a revenue problem. Our members live in the city of Chicago, are required to live in the city of Chicago. And so when popular media is having this discussion about taxpayers, you can include all of our members in that grouping because we live in Chicago and we pay taxes in Chicago. Juxtaposed to that, they have committed their lives to public service. And by committing their lives to public service, they also said that, you know, in my retirement, I should not have to be a pauper. Juxtaposed to that, if we're thinking about how we talk about contracts in Chicago as they relate to Chicago teachers, we're actually talking about a fundamental issue of equity, pay equity. The overwhelming majority of our members are women. The overwhelming majority of our PSRPs are women of color. So when we're having discussions about pay raises, when we're having discussions about retirement security, we're also having a discussion about pay equity. And it is alarming how these things are absent from the discussion. So, you know, Congress is celebrating this historic monumental moment of more women in their ranks than have ever been in the history of that space. We're celebrating more women running for office and getting in office because we want policy to reflect that. Well, what we're saying at the Chicago Teachers Union is that the demands that we're making in terms of pay, benefits, wages, the protection of our retirement security, that's also a gender issue. It's very much grounded in equity that women have been fighting for over time. That's not an issue that the right wing should be able to take and bastardize as if women are not contributing members to our city, our state, and our overall society.
Right. And we're talking about, teachers who don't get Social Security. And so, like, our pension is our retirement plan. I don't think people necessarily realize that, but our members sure do. It's important.
I couldn't let this discussion go without mentioning what were the headlines out of the news conference where you made your demands, because Stacey, you famously were asked, now famously, were asked where the system is going to get the money for.
She said from the rich.
She said from rich people. And was that more flipped than you wanted it to be?
No, it's what CTU has been saying over time. I'm echoing what we've worked for. And quite frankly, Craig, I am also echoing what voters and Chicagoans are saying too, overwhelmingly. Look, we are living in a time where Donald Trump has provided the greatest amount of tax cuts to wealthy and wealthy corporations. We're living in a time where someone like Jeff Bezos could fly around all over this country and leverage billions of dollars from cities and states and counties that really don't have it to give. And he has all the money in the universe.
Ken Griffin bought $340 million worth of homes this week.
And what we're saying about a contract that represents sustainable community schools, that represents smaller class sizes, that represents trauma supports for students who live in a very violent city, and that trauma is persistent and ongoing. We're saying that those are the children that have to get in the back of the line and feel compelled not to ask for what is equitable. And so when we have this discussion, we have to have it that just yesterday, there was a unanimous vote in favor of providing wealthy developers with an extraordinary amount of taxpayer money to subsidize a development on the north side of Chicago because it needs it. And we have roofs falling in the 10th Ward at Washington We have class sizes at Grissom in the 10th Ward that are over capacity. We have bilingual education supports that do not exist in the Chicago public schools. And we're going to give Jeff Bezos a golden goose to maybe come to Chicago. Maybe.
I couldn't have said that better. And I would just add one thing, which is that I think it got attention, that statement about, you know, taking rich people, because it's very direct. And, you know, some people expect the teachers to make, you know, arguments that sound more wonkish. Well, let's have a marginal tax rate, you know, increase in a graduated income tax policy, which has the wealthy pay out larger share. And I can make those kind of arguments. And in fact, Stacey and I are both kind of nerds about this stuff. But one of the things that we know is that, you know, in a media environment like ours, sometimes you have to be direct in order to cut through the noise. And that's one of the things that we're proud of, is that we actually have the ability to make a message in public that, that gets at a true underlying point, which is that it's incredibly unequal along all the ways that Stacey was just talking about.
Do you think that parents and more importantly, those people who don't necessarily have kids in school in this city see the deficiencies, see the problems in the schools? Because, you know, the mayor will point to some of the top schools where everything looks, and, you know, we do news conferences at some of those schools, and it looks like the Chicago schools are doing very well. But people, do they see the whole picture?
People better see it, because, you know, the only reason you can justify giving $1 billion of taxpayer money to a private development like Lincoln Yards is if you call it an investment. But what's a bigger investment than our children? And how are you going to look children on the south and west sides of the city in the face and tell them they're important, but you won't put any money behind that? I mean, if we're going to invest in our future, we're going to have to invest in the schools, and that's how we invest in our children.
Besides more money for teachers, what are the top improvements in the classroom that you need to see, that parents need to see?
Sustainable community schools. Right now at the Chicago Teachers Union, there are hundreds of community partners, parents, educators, partaking in a professional development. This last contract, we were able to win a marginal amount of sustainable community schools. What are sustainable community schools? They are schools that are going to receive resources that represent teachers who are trained in culturally competent pedagogy. Nurses, counselors, and social workers who are actually doing work and not providing tests, taking skills to our students. These are places where we have, it's basically the manifestation of our fight over time. And we won that in our last contract, where we got CPS to say that this type of model for schooling is necessary. It anchors the community. It doesn't close at 3 o'clock. Parents are welcome. GED classes, bilingual education classes, places that the school becomes the lighthouse of the community, and it sustains the neighborhood. So sustainable community school. And they're at CTU right now. That is something that we need to expand in the city of Chicago. You have every mayoral candidate talking at, except for Tony, but every other mayoral candidate talking at community, talking at investment in neighborhood schools. She's the only one who says that we're going to put more money into sustainable community schools. That is a pillar. That is a top tier priority of this contract.
You know what, Stacey, that I really took note a little over a month ago when I was listening to a candidate give a speech at City Club. His name rhymes with Richard M. Daley. Oh, and I mean, he basically said the reason people are leaving the city is because our schools are a failure. And then he said that the other reason that people are leaving this city is because there's too much crime and he's going to flood the zone with police. And, you know, I hear that, and it makes me think the 90s are calling and they want their politics back. Those have been failures, those kind of policies. Our schools are not failing. We're failing our schools. And what sustainable community schools means is that, you know, in a neighborhood that's suffering trauma, you've got to put a counselor in the school. You've got to make an investment in after-school programs that people, you know, that young people can come around and give some both emotional and academic supports to those students. Frankly, what restorative justice is about saying there should be an adult in the school that knows how to diffuse conflict and not just sort of like threaten a student with incarceration, because their honor is being insulted by someone else. You've got to have people in that community that know how to do that. Stacey, when she says it's happening right now, we have from 20 different schools, teams of teachers and community folks, counselors, like literally sitting down in a giant room. It's a beautiful sight. I mean, it's multiracial. It looks like Chicago. It's people having the real conversations about what they need to do in their school communities. And we need more of that and not the sort of old politics about, let's shut down failing schools, bring in charter schools, which don't perform better, but do undermine our neighborhood schools. Flood the zone with cops. Those things don't work.
I noticed that you also mentioned the residency requirement. That is why you're both parents. Is ending that requirement important? I know I saw an op-ed piece from a CTU member, but is that an issue?
You know, a lot of teachers feel ambivalent about that issue. It's not a direct contract issue because that's set by city policy. Of course, we've never been shy about city policy, making our opinions known about that. But look, being part of the city where we teach, we deal with, the affordable housing crunch and, teachers don't make a lot of money to afford places in the city. It's an actual contract issue. But on the other hand, living in the city means that we have a political base. It gives us a kind of legitimacy about like weighing in on social issues in the life of the city. And so I think our membership is ambivalent about it. And I know I feel ambivalent about it.
Well, and I would say, just to piggyback on that, our members aren't ambivalent about affordability and a push out of Black people in the city. To be perfectly honest with you, if Black people do not exist in the city of Chicago, the Chicago Public Schools in the way that it is constituted currently doesn't exist either. The push out of Black educators from the Chicago Public Schools is also a thing. When school deform happens in the city of Chicago, what it has done is disproportionately impact teachers who are Black, who live on the South Side, who live on the West Side, who are also being pushed out. It's not just the projects came down and Black people were offered opportunity to maybe come back to Chicago. It is also a thing that when you close a school community, when you give school communities over to private operators, that they don't hire Black women who are trained, who have like terminal degrees. They hire women who just got out of college and that they can pay them less, because it is that is truly the model of privatization. They hire younger educators. They churn out within 5 years and they perform the cycle all over again. You know, some of the battle cries that you heard when we went on strike against Uno Acero was exactly that, is that you have a group of educators who want stability in their workspace and want to plant roots in Chicago. But because these operators in the charter industry, they refuse to. In fact, their motto is to become a franchise in the vein of McDonald's. On February 5th, a group of our charter educators are going to be on strike for very similar reasons. They're getting contract offers that raises class size. They're getting contract offers that codifies the cuts to special education. They're getting contract offers that doesn't respect the need for stability in school communities. So you have this perfect storm happening. One is where veteran Black women who have done the very best at honing their craft don't exist like they used to in the Chicago public schools. And you're having a younger teacher force coming into the city of Chicago saying that you're still getting it wrong because we too need stability.
Now, we'll be honest, if anyone who has seen any news coverage of any rallies or demonstrations by the Chicago Teachers Union is going to be hearing you say, African-American teachers are being pushed out and go, wait, what? That's all I saw out there.
Well, in 2012. And so
this year.
Well, when you came to the Cerro rally, you didn't see that.
Right.
And
I would just say that in 1985, the Chicago teaching force was 45% black. And today it is 22% black. And but the student body is still largely African.
Are the numbers of Latino or Latinx teachers increasing?
Yeah. Yes. But the reality of it is that the face of who teaches in a Chicago public school is changing, and the factors that are driving that change most of all are turnarounds and school closings, because when the city targets a predominantly black school, public neighborhood school, for closing, and then replaces it with a number of charter schools, most of which are run by operators that are completely irresponsible. Mm-hmm. And by irresponsible, I mean pay wages that are way underneath what the traditional public schools pay. Big classes, these are privatization rackets in many instances.
And multiple management operations underneath. The whole theory of the case for these charter operators in 1996 is that we could do innovation with less bureaucracy. So in effect, they said we can save, rescue black children on the south side and the west side of the city if we don't have a bureaucracy. And what we're seeing at CICS are three different layers of bureaucracy that's taking their cut off the top and then paying their CEO and other managers salaries commensurate to what Janice Jackson gets, and she has, purview over nearly 600 schools.
Let me ask one question that is pure politics. A quick check of campaign filing suggests that while, and you've made it clear that the CTU is behind Tony Preckwinkle, but you are pledging support to her and other candidates. Haven't seen much money moving this year as in the past.
Stay tuned.
I mean,
there's not that much time left.
Well, this campaign cycle goes until April. We're very aware of that. We've done this back in 2015. And so we are prepared to go until April. I would say stay tuned. I would also say that we're in a very different position than what we were in 2015, to be perfectly honest with you, Craig. In 2015, we were fighting for our voice to cut through all of the rhetoric of privatization, of all the rhetoric of less means more in our school communities. You have an electorate right now who understands that progressive revenue is necessary. You have an electorate that agrees that the Chicago public schools should not be mayoral control, but that we need an elected school board. So that does cut down on some of the things that we needed to do in 2015. But make no mistake, our footprint is firmly in the ground on this race. Tony Preckwinkle has pledged to be a champion for the Chicago public schools, the people who work in these school communities, and making sure that we create a stable environment that we can grow from. She wants to be partners. This war that we've been having with the little man on the fifth floor is not something that we look forward to having with anyone. And just by her virtue of being a public school teacher and understanding what it means to do the work is important for us.
So we will be seeing some money moving soon, I guess, right?
And you're gonna see that we're gonna continue representing our movement in the public space in the city.
That's gonna be the final word. I would like to thank the CTU leadership, Jesse Sharkey and Stacey Davis Gates, for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcasts on radio.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.